You may be seated. The last file scheduled for this morning is Todd Foose versus Dahlke Family Limited Partnership and Rodney Mann. Appellants present through attorney Marty Jackley will be arguing, and Appalee is here on behalf, or Jason Rumsa is here on behalf of Appalee, Mr. Foose, and will be arguing. Each side will have 15 minutes initial argument and then 5 minutes rebuttal. The yellow light will come on and give you a 2 minute warning. With that, Mr. Jackley, you may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, counsel. In South Dakota, real property ownership and rights are given special treatment, special protections. Those protections come from the legislature and they come from this court through evidentiary burdens, including the clearly erroneous strict standard. As this court is well aware, in an adverse possession case, it requires actual and continued occupancy under a claim of title exclusive of any other right. With respect to occupancy, it must be hostile, not permissive, as it is in this case. The record owner, which in this case is Mr. Mann, is presumed to own the land absent clear and convincing evidence. The ultimate conclusion that the evidence is sufficient to constitute adverse possession is a legal determination for de novo review.
So do you allege two errors here, Mr. Jack? It seems to me like that's the argument. So there's a legal error in it that you allege or identify in the application of the doctrine of acquiescence. So that's the wrong rule.
Yes.
De novo review on that. Got to apply the right rule. Read Gangle, read the cases, and apply that. But then, in addition, it seems like there's also a component of your argument that contemplates clear error. Got to listen to Sather. Sather is the only one that knows why you put the signs there. And listen to these predecessors. They're the people that know what their intent was when they were occupying it. So is it kind of both of those?
Justice Salter, the way I would answer that question is, number one, it's the application of the doctrine of acquiescence would be a de novo review. But I would say with respect to the individual elements, whether they're satisfied is a clearly erroneous standard, which I'm not alleging. I'm alleging that there lacks a sufficiency of evidence, which again is a de novo review. There's a reason that it lacks sufficiency of evidence is because of the strong evidence of permissive use in this case, including the permissive use that goes directly to an affirmative defense on a prescriptive easement.
So for instance, when the circuit court though says, and we'll stay with the signs for a minute, says, you know, these signs were not intended to keep hunters off of both properties. They were signs of hostile occupancy. And maybe the standard of review doesn't really much matter. I don't know. But is that a conclusion that's a legal conclusion, or is that the judge interpreting the evidence and saying, no, this is what that evidence is?
My position, Justice Salter, would be it is a legal conclusion, and it is a legal conclusion because it's whether there's a sufficiency of evidence. And in looking at the sufficiency of that evidence, of course, you look at the fact that it's a subjective intent standard. Rod Sather specifically testified that's not what the purpose of those signs were. He specifically testified that he put those signs up to keep hunters off both properties. He further testified he didn't own that land.
If we feel differently, is your standard review position outcome determinative? In other words, you still win and under clear error?
Correct.
Okay. How about that? Tell me about that. Just because it's his testimony and no one said he's lying, or what?
I think it's because, number one, when you look at what is required, it is the burden of Mr. Foose to show by clear and convincing evidence that the elements are satisfied. One of those elements is, of course, that there has to be hostility. When you look at this case, the totality of the evidence, the sufficiency of the evidence to satisfy adverse possession was not met, and it was not met because of the overwhelming evidence of permissive use. Permission to move the fence where it was moved, permission to put cattle where they were at, and permission to use that road, in fact, even permission to put in a gate. And I think it's based upon that component of permission that it's a de novo review when it comes to, number one, the trial court's use of the doctrine of acquiescence, and number two, whether or not there was sufficient evidence overall for adverse possession or a prescriptive easement. as this court has made clear in the Deadwood Summit case, the doctrine of acquiescence is for boundaries and is not a separate legal doctrine. It is merely a potential component of adverse possession. It is Mr. Mann's position that the trial court erred as a matter of law in its application of the doctrine for three very basic reasons. Number one, there was no agreement to change the boundaries. Number two, the change in the fence and the use was permissive. It was clearly not hostile. And number three, this is not a mutual mistake or inadvertence case. I recognize in the Kinsella trial court case that Justice Devaney handled that there was a discussion of that, but I would point out in Kinsella that there was a mistake. There was an inadvertence when Kinsella bought the property. That did not occur here. All of the Supreme Court decisions cited in the briefs, those are mutual mistake and inadvertence cases, and it makes sense because the doctrine of acquiescence in itself is passive, not taking action. In this case, action was taken, explicit request for permission was asked, and explicit request, that request was granted. And that's what separates this, and it's why the doctrine should not have been applied and is reversible error. In looking at the permissive use evidence and the permission to move that fence, I would point to the court that Daryl Lentvid, so Daryl Lentvid was the original owner of Mr. Foose's property. He then sold it to Sather, who then sold it to Foose. Back in late 1969, early 1970, basically Daryl Lentvid went to Earl and Lou Dahlke, which would be Mann's relatives, and specifically asked for permission to move that fence, and specifically testified in his trial deposition that permission and his act of moving it was not hostile. He further testified that moving that fence did not change the ownership of the property, and that's significant. I cite 291 to 292 of the record and 297. In fact, it is so significant, I'd like to take just a moment and read to this court what Daryl Lentvid said. And this, again, separates the Kinsella case that was relied upon by the trial court, because in Kinsella, of course, there was no admissible evidence regarding the original permission. In this case, the guy that asked for it and the guy that was granted permission testified, and this is what he said. With respect to moving the fence, when he talked to Lou and Earl Dahlke, he said, question, but clearly they were okay with it and told you you could. Answer, yeah, yeah. Question, when you put that fence in after you got permission, answer, right. Question, you weren't doing a land transaction, were you? Answer, no, no. Question, you didn't pay for any additional land, did you? Answer, no. Question, you weren't changing any legal descriptions? Answer, no. Question, you weren't paying additional taxes, were you? Answer, no. Question, no, because, he answers, it was the same. Question, because really what you were doing is you had permission to move the fence so that it was more workable because of Bull Creek. Answer, right. Question, and you did that neighborly. Answer, right. And then moving on to page 297 of the record, in closing, the question was asked, and that's why it was important to you to go to Earl Dahlke and to Lou and ask for permission. Answer, right, right. Question, and it was something when you were given permission, you were respectful, weren't you? Answer, yeah. And then finally, question, you weren't trying to take their land, were you? Answer, no.
Mr. Jackley, I don't want you to run out of time without addressing another point. So the circuit court's findings and conclusions made separate findings with regard to the fence that was in place at the time that Mr. Lindved purchased the property. So before it was moved. And the court made findings with regard to the strip of land from Bull Creek to that fence that was in existence at that time, and found that there was no evidence that that was there by permissive use, and found that there was adverse possession up to that point, and then made separate findings with regard to from the old fence to where the new fence was moved. Do you take issue with the findings with regard to the land between Bull Creek and the old fence?
Yes, because the old fence would have been there sometime between late 1969 and 1971. It takes 20 years for adverse possession to kick in. The trial court heard no witnesses, saw no evidence with respect to hostility or anything of that nature required for adverse possession of the chunk east of the original fence. And actually, if you look at this case, there's three different fences and encumbered border areas. One would be the original fence that was moved in late 1960, 1971 because of flooding into the new location. And Rod Sather, and the evidence is in this record, testified that when he took ownership in 1996 timeframe, he also put up a buffalo fence, electric wire fence to keep his buffalo off man's property and to also keep them out of the Bull Creek area. And so you have three different enclosures, but with respect to the trial court's finding of anything of adverse nature prior to 1971, there's no evidence in this record of that.
But isn't that scenario precisely the scenario that the doctrine of acquiescence addresses? So there's no evidence of any permissive use of that land from the Bull Creek to the old fence either. And if it was treated as a boundary, doesn't that come into play with that parcel?
Court, Justice, this court has made crystal clear that with respect to the doctrine of acquiescence, it still requires 20 years of the adverse possession elements, hostility, occupation, et cetera. There's no evidence in this record regarding 20 years, so back 20 years from 1969 back to 1949, that there was hostility, that there was occupancy.
Why are you going backwards and not forwards? So when the fence got moved, that strip is still being used where the original from Bull Creek to the old fence was.
It's still being used by permission, which was made clear. In fact, that permission...
But the permission was to move the fence.
And the permission, though, goes beyond to just move the fence. This record, if you look at the actual record, specifically states from Daryl Lentvit again, says he had express permission to use it, including cattle. And he identified the triangle area that includes exactly what you're questioning on. And that's citing page 288 of the actual record, 290 to 291, and 307. Furthermore, his son, Brian Lentvid, that wasn't necessarily present during the original conversation between Daryl, Lou, and Earl, but he was there and he actually moved the fence. His testimony was that Dahlke expressly said they could use that land, pointing to the east, and further said that ultimately they could move that fence. And that's page 560 of the record. And then also Rodney Mann, who's the most recent owner of the land, on the Dahlke side, said that there was permission to use that property as well as to get access with respect to going through that gate. And that's page 835 of the record. This record is replete with permissive use. It lacks any hostile use until December of 2018.
So then you are arguing that the court's finding as to no evidence of permissive use of that section to be clearly erroneous?
Yes. But again, I don't think it necessarily changes the outcome of this case. And the reason is because, number one, the trial court inappropriately used the doctrine of acquiescence. Number two, there isn't any evidence that that property was used in hostile use and occupancy for 20 years prior to 1969. And once the permission was granted from Lou and Earl, it included that entire area. So that cuts it off in 1969 to 1971 timeframe.
I understand your permissive use argument as to hostility, but what about the claim of the prior or the court's finding of a prior easement or applied easement by prior use? Do you challenge that?
I do, and I challenge that again because, as this court has said on many occasions, that when you look at a prescriptive easement, that it is continued use, which is permissive, is insufficient to fulfill the requirement of hostile use. Now, this court has on occasion indicated that that is a defense. What the court hasn't indicated, whether it's by a preponderance of the evidence or whether it's by clear and convincing evidence, I would suggest that the preponderance standard used because you're forfeiting property rights. And when it comes to that use, there is significant evidence, including from Daryl Lentvid, originally when the permission was granted, that says, quote, "I asked for permission to put in a gate Lou Dahlke said, either put the fence down or go through it right there, pointing to the approach. That's 289 and 274 of the record. Brian Lentvid further confirmed that, who owned the Foose property, stating in questioning by Foose's attorney, question, the permission was to drive on the west side of the fence and have a gate that would then enter on your property. Answer, correct, because the approach is right there. That's page 562 of the record. Rod Sather further confirmed that permission from Rodney Mann at 695 and 96 of the record. And significant, even Foose's own ranch hand knew that they needed permission because he asked for permission to use that road. Foose's own trappers asked for permission to trap in that area and use that road. They sought permission because Rodney Mann owned it, and that permission and that length of time didn't change. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ramsey, you may proceed with your argument.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, counsel. Proof of the individual elements of adverse possession present questions of fact for the circuit court to determine. The ultimate conclusion as to whether or not there is sufficient facts or evidence to constitute adverse possession is a question of law. So the individual elements, including permission, those are questions of fact. Mann is asking this court to reweigh the evidence and derive new factual findings, despite the fact that it's the trial court's responsibility to weigh the evidence, including credibility, and make factual findings. Even if this court might weigh the evidence differently, so long as the trial court's factual findings are plausible in light of the entire record, this court should not reverse. Only if Mann meets this burden to show the trial court's factual findings are clearly erroneous, only then should this court reverse any particular finding. And Mann has failed to meet this heavy burden. And to be clear, this is not a burden that Mann must meet on the fourth element of adverse possession on the permission issue. It's not something that he must meet one time. Mann bears this heavy burden in three instances, and that is the land east of the old north-south boundary fence during Darrell Lintfit's ownership. That's the land between the old boundary fence and the new current fence line during Darrell Lintfit's ownership. And a third time, that's the land between the old boundary fence and the new current boundary fence during Rodney Sather and Todd Foose's ownership. Three times. That same heavy burden that Mann carries in the three instances of adverse possession in overturning the trial court's key factual findings, that same heavy burden exists in both instances where the trial court found a prescriptive easement exists. Specifically on the finding that the use of the trail was not merely permissive. And that occurred during Darrell Lintfit's use of the trail. And that occurred during Rodney Sather and Todd Foose's use of the trail. Mann has again failed to meet this burden. Now, in his argument to this court that the trial court's factual findings were clearly erroneous, Mann has highlighted for the court every snippet of testimony which he contends supports his argument, understandably. But Mann did not highlight for this court all of the testimony or evidence that weighs against his argument. But the trial court did. The trial court weighed all the testimony and the evidence presented, which included the actions or inactions taken by all of the landowners involved. The trial court did hear testimony that characterized moving the corner post of the old boundary fence as permissive, as by acquiescence, or as by agreement. But the trial court did not simply tally up the number of times the attorneys or the witnesses used those words to characterize the decision to move the corner post. The trial court asked itself, what truly was this? What is this? The trial court answered that question with its finding of fact number 63, which states, The court finds that Daryl Linfid and Lou Dahlke mutually agreed to move the boundary fence and mutually recognized the new fence line as the boundary. It was a mutual agreement. It was two adjoining landowners who had a problem with a section of the boundary fence washing out when it would flood.
So is that, do you read that finding of fact to essentially be the initiation or the commencement of a period of hostility, notwithstanding the fact that it also recognizes the permission? Doesn't it seem like it seems like there's some tension there?
And I recognize that. One of the differences, and yes, to answer your question, yes, it does start that period. But during the time, during that 20-year period in South Dakota, if that period of 20 years expires and there had been no other action or indication by Mr. Dahlke in this scenario that he had any expectation or ownership or intent to utilize the property east of the fence, those facts that demonstrate that there was, that it was not merely permissive, when that goes for that 20-year period where we're saying this was a mutual agreement to move this boundary fence, this wasn't something that was merely permissive.
So you would read that, I'm sorry to interrupt, so you would read that finding as essentially the communicating that this was the agreement for Lou Dahlke to give him the land.
Well, it was an agreement specifically to move the boundary fence and just that portion of it. And I think the record makes clear it's the probably the northmost 200 feet of this boundary fence that goes, I mean, it starts up there by Bull Creek Road and it goes down to the south and it kind of wraps around a big hill and then kind of meets up with what would be more of a straight north and south line. But that boundary fence wraps around a hill, and then when it gets up to the corner in this area in dispute, I mean, it kind of, in the 1960s, it was closer to Bull Creek, and what they did was simply kind of straighten it out and move that corner post to the west slightly, and it's slightly elevated so it wouldn't wash out. And that's what this was. They went down there because Daryl Linfid, in this case, his fence had washed out multiple times in the several years that he had owned this property, and so he had Lou Dahlke come down there, and they agreed that they would move this corner post. Now, Lou Dahlke, I mean, he benefited from this too. He got a fence that worked. And the purpose of the fence was obviously to keep the cattle that Daryl would graze off from Lou's property and specifically his hay yard there.
It seems like a critical point in time, and it seems like a critical finding that you identified. Because at that point, either the permission is to use it, but Dahlke maintains ownership, or it's permission to cede ownership to Mr. Linfid.
Well, I think there's... So, I understand the issue. The issue, though, as we've argued it in our brief is that, and it, I think it wraps into the Gangle decision and the Kinsella decision, is that there was no evidence that Lou Dahlke had any intention of actually still utilizing that's what was described as a tiny sliver of property. And, you know, the questions were asked, have you ever stacked any equipment or stacked any of your hay on the other side of the fence? Have you ever utilized it for any purpose? The answer is no.
So a landowner can't grant long-term permission to a neighbor without yielding ownership rights over time?
I believe he could. Like in Gangle, for example, the property owner in that case, Speary, who actually testified at the trial, said, so long as I can still own the property and can still use it for whatever purpose, I had no issue with him leaving, in that case, the fence that was constructed without his knowledge at the time, but so long as he still owned it and could utilize it. And the court detailed, and this court detailed the distinguishing facts in Gangle, you know, the posts that were marked where the actual property line was in Gangle, The fact that in Gangle, the son of Sperry would from time to time utilize the property on the other side of the fence to stack wood, or, you know, for fires down by the lake. There were multiple factors that the court considered in that case, but permission wasn't necessarily the issue in that case. Permission was basically understood in Gangle, and the question was, given this permission, does that extend now to the successor in interest? Does that extend to Gangle's son? Because Gangle was the one who received that permission from Sperry. And the court answered that no. Or the court answered that yes, the permission extends. But that's the key difference between Gangle is there was permission. Here the trial court found there is not permission. The importance of Gangle in this case...
Can the trial court do that in this case when the record looks like this? Can the trial court say, I know that everyone is saying, their predecessors to Mr. Cruz are saying that they acknowledge that they didn't own it. They're acknowledging that their ownership and their occupancy was, or excuse me, their occupancy wasn't hostile. They're not claiming any right. They disclaim any effort to ever do that. They say that I didn't mean the signs to mean that. And there's really, is there any evidence that says they're not telling the truth or something that puts that in doubt? Or is the record just that one-sided?
It's not, respectfully, it is both sides. And we've pointed that out. The trial court found specific findings that are contrary to the light that's, or the evidence that Mr. Jackley has put forward to the court, the snippets of testimony. There was also testimony as to the fact that it was an agreement or that there was an acquiescence in this as the boundary fence. So the trial court heard testimony multiple times describing it different ways.
Did anyone ever say, this is hostile? I view this as my own.
And to answer that question, I believe that Daryl Lindved, who gave deposition testimony or trial testimony by deposition, said no. But hostility is in layman's terms means some sort of aggression or ill will. In the legal sense, in adverse possession claims, it does not.
So, in legal terms, did anyone ever say, I thought I owned this?
I don't know that there was any, I don't know that there was specifically something stated. I think the record, which the trial court utilized to make its finding, established that it was likely inferred that the Daryl Lindved in that case had ownership rights to that property after 20 years had passed. There was a separate, then, 20-year period that the trial court looked to. And the importance of Gangle is that if this court were to make that finding that it was merely permissive use and it wasn't just a mutual agreement to move that boundary fence, if it was permissive use, then what Gangle said is that there needs to be a positive assertion of a right hostile to the record holder made known to him. And this trial court found that in Sather in 1996, after he had purchased the property, posted no trespass signs with his name on it on that subject corner post. And so the application of Gangle is really only applicable to Daryl Lindved's ownership time period. Now, you see, I've reached the two-minute warning. I want to emphasize that in that Kinsella case, the legal issue there was whether or not a mutual mistake is a prerequisite to the finding of the doctrine of boundary by acquiescence. And this court has never specifically answered that question. And for the reasons that we've stated in the brief there, and really dating back to the Lehman case in 1918, you know, this court has, and I think the important quote there, and they quoted an Iowa case, the doctrine of acquiescence is founded on the presumption of an agreement fixing the division line from long maintenance of a fence or other moment marking as a other monument marking as a line, a boundary between the adjoining owners. And this is of such strength that after the lapse of 10 years, in the interest of peace and quiet, they are not permitted to gainsay the agreement thus inferred. That's what the doctrine of boundary by acquiescence is all about. And before I close, I want to make one thing clear. The prescriptive easement is within section 9. It's the westernmost. And that's the dirt trail that goes from the gate along the road over to the gate that gets you to the rest of section 10. And the doctrine of acquiescence has nothing to do at all with the prescriptive easement issue in this case. That is simply the issue is whether or not the trial court was clearly erroneous in finding that there was not permission, that Daryl Linfed didn't ask permission, Sather and Foose didn't ask permission, and that's what the trial court found. Thank you.
Your time is up. Thank you, Mr. Jackley.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Justice Devaney, to maybe more succinctly answer your question about the old fence, the doctrine of acquiescence creates the presumption of hostility upon an ascertainable boundary. Once the fence was moved, the old fence no longer served as an ascertainable boundary. Therefore, you would have to look back 20 years from the point it was moved around 1969 to 1971. With respect to the argument about reweighing the evidence, the circuit court did specifically, explicitly find that there was credible evidence that the moving of the fence was by permission. Based upon that finding alone, irrespective of the rest of the clear record on permission, the court erred in applying the doctrine of acquiescence. There was a question by Justice Salter about did anybody testify that this was a hostile taking? And the answer is absolutely no. The answer is, in fact, they testified it was not hostile. And I cite Daryl Lentvid's record at page 297, and I cite Rod Sather's testimony at page 706. In fact, Rod Sather was so clear in further supporting what Daryl Lentvid said, he went so far as to testify, quote, "That corner that we're talking about, Daryl Lentvid specifically told me that I did not own that piece of property." And that, again, is page 706. With respect to the reference to Gangle, and there's been talk about the no trespass sign, and of course Rod Sather made that clear, that didn't change the boundary. But if you look at what Gangle actually said, it takes a lot more, especially than based on this testimony, to extinguish permission. This court said in Gangle, the law is very rigid with respect to the fact that a use permissive in the beginning can be changed into one which is hostile and adverse only by the most unequivocal conduct on the part of the user. The rule is that the evidence of adverse possession must be positive, must be strictly construed against the person claiming a prescriptive right, and that every reasonable impediment should be in favor of the true owner, which is Rodney Mann in this case. That law, that precedence, was not applied correctly, and that's reversible error. I would further point out that even further supporting the testimony of Rod Sather about that he put the no trespass sign up on an access area of both properties, he put up a buffalo fence along what he perceived was the old fence. He drew it out. It's a trial exhibit. It's in Appendix 2. He said that basically what he looked for were the old posts. I recognize that old posts can be moved around, but he indicated that is, in fact, why he put the buffalo fence in, which is why there's not a full enclosure, which is why there is further evidence that everybody knew, from the ranch hand to the trappers to Brian Lentvid to Daryl Lentvid to Rodney Mann, that that property is Rodney Mann's property, that Daryl Lentvid gave Rodney Mann's grandpa and uncle permission to move that fence so it didn't flood. In fact, even more compelling than Gangle, before that fence was put in, he came in and gave permission to put it where it's at so he didn't have to rip it out and move it around. He gave him permission to use the other side for cattle. And it's important to note that when Daryl Untvedt testified, he said, of course Rodney Madden had permission to come over there. And as I read to you his testimony on page 297, it's because Rodney Mann and his family owned that property.
But to
go ahead, please.
To the easement, I don't know that you really answered the question about the implied easement by prior use. So permission has nothing to do with that.
Correct.
Right?
There's
so and your issue there has to do with, as I understand it, the unity of ownership?
Unity of title. That's exactly right. And what occurred at trial is it was clear that there was permissive use and that was going to be a problem, so the trial court allowed amendment of the complaint to include implied easements by use and necessity, and there was a scamper to try to get record deeds, et cetera, of the property, and it's clear in this record there's no unity of title. In other words, Hullinger, it isn't shown in this record whether Hullinger owned both the Mann and the Foose property at the relevant time. In fact, there's no proof that they even owned it at the same time.
And you're talking about Clarence and Anna Marie Hollinger, not the 46 contractor deed before the Jasper and Laura.
Yes, but I would further point, even with respect to the evidence, that there's no evidence with respect to that geological map. That map is October, and these transfers were prior to that, and has to be common use more than a cattle trail.
Your time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case is now submitted. Thank you.